Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. Tomorrow night is the 13th annual Brower Youth Awards in San Francisco. Every year, the Earth Island Institute recognizes six young activists for their work and leadership in environmental and social justice issues. The Brower Youth Awards were established in 2000 to honor renowned environmental advocate David Brower. And on today's Your Call, we are happy to be joined in studio by three of this year's winners. 22-year-old Ryland King founded Sprout Up, a program that recruits college students to teach elementary school children about the environment. The curriculum, which is aligned with the California State Board of Education's content standards, includes topics like the importance of bees, composting, and water conservation. In less than 3 years, 400 college student volunteers have taught more than 3,000 elementary school students in 200 classrooms across California. Ryland hopes that by 2015, college students will be teaching at least 14,000 elementary school students every year. Ryland lives in Santa Barbara. He was born in Pacifica, and he joins us here in studio. Hi, Ryland. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Rose. Thank you so much.
Great to have you. We are also joined by 20-year-old Maya Salcedo. Maya is the descendant of immigrants from Puerto Rico who found their way to Hawaii to work in the sugarcane fields. Her family has always had trouble accessing healthy food, and that experience with food insecurity spurred Maya to dedicate herself to advancing food justice. In 2011, while working as a youth organizer with the Earth Island Institute-sponsored project Rooted in Community, Maya proposed creating a youth food bill of rights. And Maya is from Santa Cruz, and she's also in studio. Hi, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Great to have you. We're also joined by 17-year-old Asa Needle. In 2009, Asa joined the Toxic Soil Busters. That's a youth run cooperative that offers residents soil testing, remediation, and lead-free landscaping services. He was only 15 then, but already well-versed in environmental justice issues. Asa now leads the cooperative's remediation efforts. His team has restored more than 40 lead-contaminated yards in Worcester, Massachusetts. He also organizes events and workshops in community spaces where he talks to residents about the hazards associated with lead pollution. And he is from Worcester, Massachusetts. Trying to get that one right. Hi, Asa. Welcome to the show.
Excited to be here. Well, thanks for having us.
I'm excited to have all of you, and congratulations. And I want to let listeners know that you can meet these three winners along with the rest tomorrow night at the Herps Theater, the War Memorial Veterans Building, for the Brower Youth Awards. The ceremony is at 7:30. Doors are at 5:30. It is a free event, and you can sign up for tickets. Find a link at yourcallradio.org. So congratulations. Why don't we go around and just give us a little sketch, an overview of the work that you do. Ryland, let's start with you.
Sure. So with Sprout Up, we're a group of college students that believe that when a child speaks confidently, people listen. What we do is we link college students with first and second grade classrooms to teach the 6- or 8-year-old students about environmental science and sustainability with hands-on projects and experiments and activities, and then also link those lessons back at the home with their parents and friends. And we do it without charging the public schools a penny.
That's incredible. And by 2015, you're hoping that college students will teach at least 14,000 students, and you've already taught more than 3,000.
That's the goal. Yeah, we've been able to expand over the past 3 years from the first classroom we taught in Santa Barbara with 25 students to this year alone being able to reach 4,000 children in 6 cities throughout California. So we've had an expansion model that has been proven to work, and we are looking forward to taking it into more cities in California over the next 3 years, and we will teach 14,000 students by 2015.
We have done shows about curriculum and the controversy over curriculum in places like Arizona and Texas, and I'm just wondering who decides what is being taught. And what's that process been like?
Yeah, it's actually been an hours upon hours of work process. We've worked with educational professionals from the superintendents of the Goleta Union School District and Santa Barbara School District, as well as renowned environmental educators such as Bridget Lewin, to create a 8-week program with 8 lessons that align to California content standards, but also incorporate the environmental aspect, which is currently not taught in our schools. It is something that we see as one of the most pressing issues for our next generation as they grow older, and we want to give them the solutions to take it on at a young age and also gain appreciation for it so they can use it when they get older and care for it as they grow.
That's great. And we'll talk more a little bit about the specifics later in the show. That's Ryland King, founder of Sprout Up. And Maya, what about you? Talk a little bit about your family history. Your parents emigrated from Puerto Rico, found their way to Hawaii to work in the sugarcane fields. And I understand that they always had trouble accessing healthy food.
Yeah, so just to clarify, actually, I'm the descendants of folks from Puerto Rico, but my immediate family is my mom was born in Buffalo, New York.
So your ancestors went to Hawaii from Puerto Rico.
My great-grandfather was born on Hawaii, and that's why my great-great-grandparents came to the United States initially was to work in the food system. So pretty far back, I have a connection to the food system. And more recently, I grew up in a single-parent household headed by my mother, and we experienced a lot of food insecurity, as I like to describe it, meaning we had a lot of access to junk food, microwave meals, fast food. And despite the fact that for a good amount of my childhood, my mom worked at a farm-to-table restaurant, we still were eating a lot of unhealthy food at home. And it was through an opportunity to learn about the food system as a high school student that I realized that my family's story is part of a network of folks who have experienced food insecurity because of a broken food system. I realized that it wasn't just poor choices that we were making, but that we actually had a lot less choices than other people. And so that's what's really inspired me to envision a food system where folks have equal access to healthy, fresh, affordable, organic, local produce.
And so you created a Youth Food Bill of Rights.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2011, we got 100 youth from around the country to meet in Philadelphia, and we looked at the Farm Bill, we looked at what was actually going on in our communities, and saw that we had a lot of similar issues of access and in access in our communities. And so the 100 youth got together, we voted on what issues were the most, had the most crossover, what were most important to us, and we identified 17 issues that address a food system that's good for our bodies, good for the planet, and good for the people and animals that produce the food.
And that is Maya Salcedo. She is the descendant of immigrants from Puerto Rico who found their way to Hawaii in order to work in sugarcane fields, another winner of the Brower Youth Awards. And what about you, Asa? Tell us about how you started learning about lead at such a young age.
I really didn't know much about it before I joined the organization I'm with now, the Toxic Soil Busters. I was sort of looking for a job that wouldn't just lead me into, you know, a dead end that sort of would give me an opportunity to exercise skills and learn things in a way that I don't think a lot of youth have the opportunity to do. Through that, I found out more about how systemic the problem of lead and other environmental hazards in our community was, and how it was. I was really shocked to find out how disproportionately affected the low-income people of color communities in the Maine South community in my city. And that sort of disparity and those shocking differences in the way that different people were living right here in my own town sort of inspired me to keep doing the work and educating and getting that work out there.
So can you describe for us, when you're talking about these communities dealing with lead poisoning, can you be specific?
Absolutely. Well, Worcester's an old industrial town, and when there was a booming manufacturing business, a whole bunch of triple-deckers, three-story houses were built up for cheap immigrant labor, and they used long-lasting, cheap lead paint, even when there was a lot of research out indicating that it was, in fact, toxic to people, especially to children. And now that most of that industry is gone, and we're left with the environmental consequences of that, which is even when houses are de-leaded and even when they're painted over, that lead insidiously leaks into the soil and lurks there, where people playing in their backyards can ingest it and deal with all the horrific effects of that, which include diseases in the organs. Your body thinks it's calcium, so it's incorporated into your bones. It can lead to mental effects such as ADHD or not being able to pay attention, lowered IQ. It's really systemic and really stunts physical and mental growth and sort of perpetuates the divisions we have in class in the way that it's just another obstacle between people changing their lives and turning around the situation.
And Worcester is about 40 miles west of Boston. Mm-hmm. According to the latest census data, 1 in 5 residents there live below the poverty line, almost double the Massachusetts average.
Wow.
That's, I didn't hear that statistic, but that doesn't surprise me. Massachusetts has been doing remarkably well next to the rest of the country in regards to recovering from the recession, but in a lot of ways, communities in Worcester are left behind.
And Asa, you're 17. How did you get involved initially with Toxic Soil Busters? I mean, what was it about, what inspired you to connect with an organization like this?
Well, there was just an amazing community in Worcester of people working around these environmental issues, whether from the perspective of youth work or environmental justice or trying to create green jobs in the city. And I think that that's really the way to get youth involved. The way I was involved is to create a community where they're like, hey, we're really building a new culture here. We're building a new way to get plugged in and involved, as opposed to this more of top-down, hey, come look at my specific program, or here, we'll look at these benefits.
And did you learn about this in school? Is this something your family talks about?
I was involved in an alternative education cooperative that ran out of a local community center, and we sort of were in the soup of all these advocacy and organizing groups, from ex-con rights groups to immigrants' rights groups.
Wow.
All in one place. And we actually had a fire 2 years ago, and we've had, after a long insurance fight, we're in the process of rebuilding, hoping to reopen this winter and be back in the place where we started.
Yeah, if you ever meet Asa, he doesn't seem 17.
Well, and Asa, again, he leads the cooperative's remediation efforts at Toxic Soil Busters, and he's one of the 6 winners of the Brower Youth Awards, which is taking place tomorrow night in San Francisco. It's an amazing event. You can find free ticket information at yourcallradio.org. What about you, Ryland? Where does the interest in environmental activism come from?
I grew up in Pacifica, and specifically at the beach in Pacifica for a lot of my days. And I think I had a great affinity for the natural world by being in it all the time. And I was lucky enough to be involved with the surf camp when I was younger. And I was placed with a developmentally disabled child for an entire week. And when we started the week, this child wouldn't even tiptoe into the shoreline, and I just couldn't get him out in the water. But by the end of the week, I was unable to take him out of the water. And he was doing dances on the surfboard and all these fun, cool tricks that I'd taught him. And that was really special to see his development over time. But what was even more special was his parents walked up to me at the end and overcome with emotion, they said, "Ryland, thank you. Our child has never been so conscious of us before in our lives." And that really hit me hard, that when I taught one child, many people began to learn. And so I think from my time in the ocean and my time at a surf camp teaching children, that I found that children can be a community's most powerful agents of change. And that's where the idea for Sprout Up stemmed from.
Can you give us an example of, you know, a child that these college students have reached, and maybe another story, maybe a child that didn't know much about the environment?
Most definitely. We teach in public schools, and so many of the children that we teach may not have a chance to be out in nature all the time, on hikes or down at the beach checking out tide pools or covered in mud on the weekends. And we want to bring some sort of appreciation through college students' passion into their lives. One of the students that I was actually connected with, named Omar, I saw in a Trader Joe's down in Santa Barbara one day. And we have a lesson where we go in and teach about reusing. And they each get a reusable bag, and they paint it. And he painted his to his mom. And they write a little letter on it and put some cool pictures. And I saw him in Trader Joe's, and he ran up to me screaming, "Bark, bark, bark." And Bark is my nature name. All of us have nature names in the classroom. And so he came up to me and said hi. And then his mom was kind of like, "Who is this older college student my kid's running up to?" And I introduced myself, and she actually had the bag in her shop shopping cart. And that was just so cool to see that what we bring into these kids' hands is going home and then being used by their parents. And that's a talking point.
How old is Omar?
Omar was 7 years old, the first grader.
That's great. Mm-hmm. That is Ryland King. He's the founder of Sprout Up, and they recruit college students to teach elementary school kids about the environment. By 2015, they're hoping to reach at least 14,000 elementary school students. We're also joined by Maya Salcedo. She is working on a youth food bill of rights, and Asa Needle. It runs the Toxic Soil Busters Remediation Efforts. That's a youth-run co-op that offers residents soil testing in Worcester, Massachusetts. And these three are here today because they have won the Brower Youth Award. Tomorrow night is the 13th annual Brower Youth Award. It's an incredible event. You can find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. And if you have any questions or comments for Ryland, Maya, or Asa, we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. Also, if you know of a young person in your life that has inspired you to get more involved in the environment, we'd love to hear from you. If there's a youth-led organization that you'd like to talk about, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And so, Maya, your family history really got you involved. Can you talk a little bit more about your Youth Food Bill of Rights and just hearing Ryland's story and Asa's story? What goes through your mind? I mean, it's just so great to hear such passion from young people. Well, you know, the fact is we rarely hear young voices in the media.
Absolutely.
So it's really inspiring to hear these stories.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these are the kinds of stories, stories of youth realizing a gap in education or a gap in access in their community and taking action. This is exactly what youth are doing across the nation. And what's exciting about the Youth Bill of Rights is that these youth are already doing the work to make access real in their communities. And the Youth Bill of Rights is going to be a tool that we can use to hold politicians, institutions, schools accountable to providing our communities with a food system that's whole, that serves everyone in an equal manner. And I think that youth energy, we were discussing this as a group, the winners, youth energy and the potential for youth to make change right now is at a peak. I think, you know, if we think historically to social movements, young people have been at the forefront, the tipping force that takes a group idea into action. And we really see youth across the nation stepping up as leaders, creating access in their communities, and see this not just as a campaign, but the Youth Food Bill of Rights really showcases the voice of a movement of youth who are really making changes.
We have a comment from Madonna on our Facebook page. She says, I have a 94-year-old friend who's been a lifelong activist. He expresses great sadness about youth in action. These young activists are the examples I share with him about those that do make a difference. Can you talk about that? Because you still hear that a lot, that there's, where are the youth? You know, why are they inactive? But what would you say to that, Ryland?
I really believe that our generation probably has the best access to make incredible change out of any generation that's ever come before in human history. We have the whole platform of the internet to organize. I can put a post up on Facebook and in a half an hour have 100 people on board with that post and talking and discussing a thread and getting people aware. So I think that there are very, very many active college students and high school students and even younger that are passionate about those causes that they do care about that affect their lives. And I think they are looking to get involved with organizations that can cater to them. I think that there are tons and tons of activated youth, just as there were 94 years ago. And I think that today they even have more potential to step up and go.
Asa, what would you add to that?
I mean, it's just a miracle to me that any youth are doing anything, to me, considering a lot of the climate that's created around youth. And I definitely think that once you break through a certain barrier, the opportunities are absolutely amazing. And there's whole communities of people that have been so supportive to me in my attempts to make a difference in any small way. But, I mean, it's really just completely permeates our culture that the idea
that youth are basically in a phase where they're being pumped full of knowledge that they can be productive members of society, which means being obedient members of the workforce, and sort of smashing individuality at every level in the education system and pumping them full of drugs and punishing creativity and punishing collaboration by calling it cheating and punishing critical thinking by calling it talking back and suspending people for wearing clothes that are out of line. And that whole culture, this monoculture of creating one-size-fits-all systems for youth and creating, making them into interchangeable parts, and then just wondering as if the youth in action just happens in a void, as if it was some genetic thing that was in the air and not like the direct results of decades of policies to crush youth into this mold.
We were actually talking yesterday. Brower Youth and the Earth Island Institute took us to the Bioneers Conference, and we were on a panel in San Rafael at the conference yesterday. And I think there was a question that mentioned, what did we think about being youth in this position and the power that it holds? And one of us kind of mentioned that at times when you're beginning to push a cause, it's sometimes hard to get your voice heard because you are younger. But I think once you hit a point where you are able to focus your cause, your mission to a Bill of Rights or to lead remediation and have a plan set, the voice of youth is something that is very, very powerful. And many people like to hear and see that they're stepping up. I think that's kind of why we got on to call this morning and are able to be talking with you, Rose, is people like to see and hear that the youth are doing something big. And once you hit that kind of tipping point that Asa mentioned, it spans far.
And you make such a good point, Asa, because we hear these judgments about young people, but we rarely have conversations about what it means to be young in today's society. And the list that you just mentioned is, I mean, it's really incredible, and it's hardly talked about. What are your thoughts about that, Maya? What is it like to be a young person in today's society?
Well, with Rooted in Community, the organization that I'm the youth organizer for, we see youth from diverse communities across the nation, whether it's in an urban setting or a rural setting, lots of low-income youth, youth of color, and even some really awesome refugee communities that we work with. And across the board, I think, as Ryland mentioned, we're in an information age, and youth are dialed in. But there's also some youth who don't have access to some of those tools. And there's a lot of youth who are apathetic about what we're doing. But then, as we see, there's thousands of youth who are leaders in their community who we can call on. And who are making changes. So it's kind of a mixed bag. And I think that a lot of the economic pressures that some communities are facing are a huge barrier to their ability to get connected. And I think one way that a lot of organizations that we work with have creatively gotten around that issue is being able to pay youth for time where they're not only working, maybe growing food or teaching classes, but where they're also learning more. I think that that's a really great way to be able to engage even more youth is by being able to pay them to be a part of this activism and this work.
That is Maya Salcedo. We're also joined by Ryland King and Asa Needle, three of the six Brower Youth Award winners. The event is tomorrow night in San Francisco, 7:30, doors 5:30. Find free ticket information at yourcallradio.org. What are your thoughts? If you're a parent, are your children getting a good education about the environment and social justice issues? And what do you think about today's youth and activism versus maybe 20, 30 years ago? It's Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call here on KALW San Francisco. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. And if you prefer to write rather than call, you can send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a message at yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. And coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation about where U.S. foreign policy is heading. Tonight is the last presidential debate at 6 o'clock, focusing on foreign policy. And check it out tonight and then call in tomorrow. We'll open the lines. We want to get your reactions. What do you think of the questions? And what are the most important foreign policy issues facing the U.S. today and what needs to change? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join today's show, we are talking with three of the six David Brower Youth Award winners. It's tomorrow night in San Francisco, doors at 5:30, the ceremony's at 7:30 at the Herbst Theater, 401 Van Ness. You can find free ticket information at yourcallradio.org. If you're a young person, we'd love to hear from you. If you work with young people, what do they talk about in terms of the environment and social justice? If you have a child in school, how are they taught about social justice and environmental issues? And if you'd like to talk about some of the stereotypes out there about young people today, you've got three on the panel. When do we ever hear from young people? Unfortunately, it's all too rare, but we believe it's really important to give young people a voice to talk about what it's like to be a young person today, what really inspires them, what are the differences between today's young generation and maybe when you were, well, Asa is only 17 to say 25. What are the differences? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. Today we're joined by Ryland King. He is founder of Sprout Up. They recruit college students to teach elementary school kids about the environment in California. Maya Salcedo is working on a youth food bill of rights. She is the descendant of immigrants from Puerto Rico who made their way to Hawaii to work in sugarcane fields, and her family has always had trouble accessing healthy food. We're also joined by Asa Needle. In 2009, he joined the Toxic Soil Busters, a youth-run co-op that offers residents in Worcester, Massachusetts, soil testing and lead-free landscaping services. He now leads their remediation efforts. And let's hear from Mick in San Francisco. Hi, Mick. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose, and hi, everyone. Thanks for another great show. First of all, I wanted to applaud these young people for getting involved, and I'm very much an environmentalist myself. I have two young boys in San Francisco, and I've always thought that, you know, one thing that we're lacking along, quite honestly, with civics and teaching in schools is giving kids a sense of, you know, how to be good stewards of the environment, like you would teach them a history class or math or reading from when they're little, and they would have those reflexes to want to be good stewards. But I think a big problem that we see with youth engagement or lack thereof and apathy, in my mind, comes from this sort of notion that we worship consumption, that, you know, we've got to get the new gadget, we have to have the new digital this, that. And so, you know, combined with pop culture, we sort of lose our sense of what tangibly really, really makes a difference. And that goes for the broad spectrum of the political environment and being engaged there. So how do you break, I guess a question for the panel then, of these young, bright young people, how do you break that cycle among your peers of focus on consumption and, you know, that sort of superficial thing dominating versus the things that really matter, like the activities you're engaged in?
Thank you.
We were actually, that's a great question. Thank you, Mick. I think that one of the best ways to deal with the great consumption that is kind of the pivotal part of our society today is to get people to share their things rather than to buy more. And we actually were lucky enough to meet with Adam Werbach, who is the founder of Yerdle.com, Yerdle.com. And what their deal is they are an online platform that allows people to share their items with their friends and community members rather than go out and buy more. So I think there's a big opportunity online for us to basically create an a global garage sale where we all have more than enough stuff in our own homes and some things that we don't always use, where we can begin to share those around to each other rather than to go out and consume and buy more. And I think also having some powerful media strategies that would come along with the less consumption message would be a good thing, but I think that it's we still want to have access to those new items or the items that we need to use, and maybe through this new site, yertle.com, it could be a way of making that happen. What do you guys think?
Yeah, Mick, I think this is such an interesting question because it gets to the point of what is our strategy when we're talking to youth about these issues. And I think first off, we have to meet youth where they're at. And before we can tell them to put down their cell phone, we need to get a hold of them on their cell phone. We need to get a hold of them on Facebook. And so at Rooted in Community, we really believe in incorporating arts, social media, music, dance, poetry, as a way to meet youth where they're at in the kind of pop culture type of scene, so that then we can start to have those other questions and conversations with youth about consumption. We just saw a really great youth-led theater troupe that was using theater as a tool to talk about consumption and talk about monopolies and talk about the waste produced in our consumption culture. And I see youth using these tools as a really great way to educate their peers in creative, artistic ways that allow them to express themselves and reach folks where they're at. Because before we can ever get youth off the computer, I think we've gotta reach them where they're at. This summer, we rewrote the words to a pop song to talk about our visions for the food system, and that was a fun experience. And going through the airport on our way home from our conference, we were all remembering the words.
What would you add, Asa?
Yeah, I absolutely agree that it's important at the same time that we're trying to build alternatives to also look at the big picture. And again, it's talking about how, you know, youth consumerism is often looked at in a vacuum, like, oh, these youth are just consumers. But that's also the way that they are treated and the way they're perceived in the media as primarily walking dollar signs that have a certain market value. And that's the primary way that the whole of the culture interacts with them is as consumers. And in that way that they have no individuality, they have no voice. And then I find when I try to talk to people, to young people about consumerism, I'm consuming all the time. Like, we're all consumed beings, and there's like a lot of conflict internally about that. But it's really like, who's benefiting when you sew your mouth and you consume and you don't think critically about the world around you? Someone's benefiting from that because a system's been set in place for you to fill that role. A script's been written for you to fill that function. And then looking at the real class of people that benefit from selling things to youth and not having someone question their authority and their power.
Well, thank you again for the question, Mick. And if you have a question or a comment for our panel of Broward Youth Award winners, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. And if you have children, I'd love to hear from you in terms of, you know, how are they being taught or are they being taught about the environment and social justice issues? And if they're not, maybe you can connect with Ryland's group, Sprout Up, and maybe they can send some college students to your child's school to talk about these very important issues. And if you have if there's a young person in your life or a youth-led organization that you'd like to tell us about, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment on our website. And let's go next to Elizabeth and Aptos. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thank you for a wonderful show.
Thank you.
I have a really quick comment, which is just that if people are interested in more voices from youth, on November 17th, worldwide, there will be many TEDx conferences called TEDx Youth.
Oh, cool.
You might even want to do a show on that. I don't know. But that's all I know about it, but I thought it might just fit in with today's topic. So thank you.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I haven't heard of TEDx Youth. I wonder if this is the first time.
Yeah, TEDx has been, I'm not sure if TEDx Youth has happened, but TEDx is an online kind of YouTube platform,
right,
for innovative ideas. And the TEDx series is allowing people to put that their own innovative ideas onto the TED online community without having a true affiliation with TED itself. And I think having that youth conference coming up on November 17th featuring youth doing TEDx videos could be very powerful. And there's that kind of use of online media as a way to pass ideas around and highlight youth voices.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll look into it, Elizabeth. Did you want to mention something else, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, just a brief TEDx anecdote. Yeah. Brittany Stallworth, she's from Howard University. She's another one of the Brower Youth Award winners this year. And she was mentioning how she got inspired about talking with communities of color around the environmental issues and green jobs, and borrowing some of the language that they use from a TEDx video that she watched. So these are really informational. I know I've cited one in a paper once also.
Yeah, I've been living on TED over the past 3 years just to gain inspiration.
Well, thank you again for calling in, Elizabeth. And we have an email from Zoe. Our grandchildren attend a progressive public school in Portland. Do you know of any opportunities there for community service, particularly related to accessible food?
Maya. Yeah, so in Oregon, that's a tricky one. I'm not sure of any organizations that are out there yet, but I know some great places to start looking. Our community centers or schools that might have gardens, those are great places to look.
Yeah, there's got to be something
in
Portland.
Yeah, I'm certain there is. Yeah, absolutely. Portland is quite the foodie space. Another good place to check in are our local co-ops and grocery stores and farmers markets to see, you know, are there youth there? And if not, why not? And who's attending those spaces can really give us clues on where organizing is happening in our communities.
Right, it's a good place to start, and I'm sure you'll find plenty of information up there, Zoe. Thanks for the email. I wanted to ask you, Asa, to share a couple personal stories from your experience. When we're saying that you lead the cooperative's remediation efforts at Toxic Soil Busters, what does that mean exactly?
Well, I'm very adverse to terms like leader or running. It's a cooperative.
Right.
So, for example, on the yard that we worked most recently on, someone else was the lead organizer, and we try to rotate all those rules from facilitating in our meetings.
So paint us a picture. What does this look like? When you learn that a place has lead, what does it look like, and what's the process involved?
Well, we try to provide youth jobs. So this cooperative, Toxic Soil Busters, actually employs youth, and we specifically seek out youth that wouldn't have these opportunities to learn about these things and have these jobs normally. We have like a progressive policy of really reaching into the communities that we work in to find youth to come work here. And we have a very great, I think we speak like 4 or 5 languages between us in our group right now. And we go out into the community, we do outreach, we educate people, and then they give us a call to come do lead soil testing. We do that for free as a sort of way to get the conversation going and get into people's homes and start talking about it. We'll come in, we'll do a composite sample, test soil from a bunch of different places in a yard to sort of get an idea of what the general lead levels are, and we'll send them off to a lab. And then if we find high levels of lead there, we sort of weigh a number of different factors. Are there kids there? What's the level of ground cover? How available it is to homeowners to determine what the best policy is. We have contracts with the city to do some of this remediation if they're on a program called the Worcester Lead Abatement Program. Otherwise, we operate as a business, which a part of our model is that we have a sliding scale of what people can afford to do that landscaping and cover that up.
And what's the reaction of the residents when they find out that there's lead in their soil and then a group of young people show up to help them out?
Well, most of the people that we test have some idea of what our business is and what our mission is, so come into it knowing that we are a group of youth that has experimented with this. We get a lot of naysayers and a lot of doubts, of course, in a lot of the places that we go, but overall, our community has been really supportive of the work we're doing. Sometimes they're really surprised at how high lead levels are. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're not, because there's a lot of cynicism. There's just an assumption that everything in their neighborhood is saturated with toxins, and they're surprised when the spot isn't.
And how much lead are we talking about?
We've found lead in most of a large majority of the houses we've tested so far, even accounting for testing more in at-risk communities. And the vast majority of incidents of youth, we don't do the blood testing, but blood testing of lead is concentrated really in the middle of the city where the most low-income people of color communities live.
And so there is an organization that is taking blood samples.
Yeah, I think that local
good.
Local groups are doing that.
But it's not, I mean, the whole thing is that this is a problem that I've run across with groups, I mean, that are doing lead work up in Lewiston, Maine, or all over the place, that people don't want more data because data reveals the problem. So that you have this issue of how do you really talk about how systemic this issue is if they're stopping you from even, like, doing that testing.
Have you had any response from any of the politicians in the area?
We do. When we do events, we try to do that community organizing, get voices out, as well as connect with politicians. We don't discriminate. And we have some great people on our local city council that we work with.
And Maya, this directly connects to food.
Absolutely.
Because if your soil is in such bad shape, how are you going to access fresh fruits and vegetables?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in urban landscapes,
right.
It can be pretty dangerous to grow food, and that's a huge barrier. And so a lot of organizations are taking some interesting tactics to get around the issue of food with lead in it. And so what a lot of folks do are making raised beds, which is awesome because not only does that separate the soil that contains lead from the soil that will be nourishing the plant, but it's a little bit easier on your back, makes the beds accessible to folks who have other, like, physical impairments. And then folks are making rooftop gardens, trying hydroponics. There's a lot of interesting ways to get around it. So no matter what soil you've got in your backyard, you can get a window box to grow some food, make a raised bed. So there are cool solutions out there.
That is Maya Salcedo. She is working with Rooted in Community. She proposed a youth food bill of rights. Asa Needle works with Toxic Soil Busters, a youth-run co-op that offers residents in Worcester, Massachusetts, soil testing. And Ryland King is the founder of Sprout Up, a program that recruits college students to teach elementary school kids about the environment. And you can meet Ryland, Maya, and Asa, along with three other winners of the Brower Youth Awards, tomorrow night. It's at the Herbst Theater, 401 Van Ness in San Francisco. Doors at 5:30. The ceremony is at 7:30. It's one of the most inspiring events of the year. You can find free ticket information at yourcallradio.org. And if you have a question or comment for today's guests, you can... we have just about 5 minutes left, so now is a good time to call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. Elfrida writes, young people like your guest today give me such hope for the future of this planet and our society. I admire them so much for taking on the difficult challenges their generation faces in such a positive and active way. Thank you, thank you. Well, thank you for the email, Elfrida. And let's hear from Felicia in Berkeley. Hi, Felicia.
Hi, yes. I'd like to ask Ryan about using cover crops to, and also mycelium to draw up the lead out of the soil. I just would like to hear if he's thought of such a thing or if such a thing is in, you know, if that's practical.
And that's Asa. Thank you.
Yeah, we're really excited about that, actually. When we started using perennial plants like scented geraniums or sunflowers to do that kind of phytoremediation, you plant them, they soak up the lead in the soil, and then they're safely disposed of. We found out that they wasn't the cure-all that we'd hoped it'd be, but it's definitely something that's on the cutting edge of finding more holistic ways to really rejuvenate soil in any inner city neighborhoods. We also do a lot of, like, hardscaping and bringing in new soil. Mycelium is something that we haven't done any testing on, but we're really excited about doing in the future if we get funding for it, doing myco-remediation with mushrooms. There's a lot of cool stuff that I've heard from other people about that. So it's definitely something that we've thought about, and I'm excited that other people know about this stuff, too.
And how are you funding all of this? And because you're doing so much, mm-hmm. I'm guessing that a lot of the leaders in the community have been shamed into trying to take action?
We have a lot of allies.
17-year-old kids trying to get lead out of people's soil.
A lot of leaders in our city, and it was originally started as a coalition between adults in the community and youth. Mm-hmm. Sort of building those cross-generational connections between college students, between people that are older members of the community, and between people that are still just sort of finding their feet in this whole world of environmental activism. And yeah, it's just really exciting to see all those people come together. I mean, I don't know how much I have to do with that.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the call, Felicia. Let's go next to Marion in Richmond. Hi, Marion.
Hi. Good morning, first of all, to all of you. I just wanted to say thank you to Ryan King for this whole Sprout Up thing. I live here in the inner city of Richmond, California, and I volunteer at Siege Elementary School. I'm just a parent. I'm a young parent, and I really want this to be brought to our school because there's a lot of there's not hope in the school system right now, and the parents feel very powerless. And to hear this and to hear this from a young person speaking, it gives me such hope and it gives me such excitement. And I thank you for, you know, even bringing this up today. It's just wonderful.
Well, thank you, Marion. We have a related email, Ryland, from JP, who says, I have two boys, preteen and teen, and I do not see social justice being linked to environmental issues in our schools. How can we encourage this linkage?
Marion, thank you so much for your comment. That meant the absolute world. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, feel free to email me at rylandking@eeng.org. With regards to linking social justice with environmental education in our schools, I think we need to think about first, what do our schools want? What do we want for our schools? We want a lower teacher to student ratio. We need to have curriculum that wraps around California state standards, and we need to make sure that there is time in our children's days at schools to learn everything that's absolutely necessary. And so to come in with a new program, we need to cater to those three different points. And I think that you can wrap mathematics, English, social studies around the environment as well as around social justice in many different creative, fun ways. And if you can bring a program that does much of those, which Sprout Up is able to do in a classroom and do it absolutely free of charge, it's something that's going to be very, very attractive to public school education systems, especially California took a $328 million hit to public education last December, and to bring a program that brings depth and dimension and a new topic that is important to the children of our day, absolutely free of cost, is something that's attractive and will want it in those schools.
And what would you say to Marion about parents feeling powerless on this issue?
I think that the biggest thing to do is there needs to be one person who stands up with a sense of hope. And by one person standing up with a sense of hope, another person will stand up with a sense of hope. And there needs to be an unconditional sense of hope that we can make the difference and provide our schools with the resources that are needed, because we care to make sure that our generation lives in a society that was better than what we grew up with. And I think that parents banding together in a way that is agreed upon is something that is very, very special. So I think to Marion, the first thing that I would advise you to do is be the one that stands up with a sense of hope and uplifts your community to take on the education system that is faltering there.
And so with Rooted in Community, really excited to announce that we have an online curriculum tool shed that folks can access and share that includes a lot of the curriculum that organizations from across the nation have developed that incorporate environmental issues, food issues, with the social justice aspects. An exciting one I'd like to just highlight is how some examples in urban settings, and Richmond would be a perfect example for this, where youth are brought out of the classroom with cameras, pens, and notebooks, and they walk around their community and look at what their environment that they live in looks like. And what we've come to find is a lot of youth realize that there's something called like an eco-apartheid happening in their communities, where the environments they grew up in, Richmond, with incredible pollution, would be a good example. And corner stores, fast food restaurants. When youth get an opportunity to walk around, do some mapping, take some photos, write an essay for class about it, that's an amazing way that they can incorporate observation, critical thinking, writing skills, and observation with the social justice aspect of looking at our built environments.
And realize their power.
Absolutely.
Asa, final thoughts from you?
Yeah, it's
I'm really have a lot of ideas about education. Not, you know, I don't have a lot of experience. I'm not a, I don't teach in the Worcester Public Schools. I was there for elementary school. So, like, everything with a grain of salt. But it's really just a bizarre paranoia around getting kids out of the classroom. There's there's no context for the fear that is clutched around the standardized testing that is just, it has its grip around all over the country. And really just looking, I mean, I love the work that Ryland and Maya are doing, because as Ryland sort of like taking the stuff that isn't being talked about and doing anything he has to, aligning it with the standards, talking to whoever he has to, making those connections to get that conversation into schools. And Maya also using those tools, like building a Bill of Rights, and then not just building the tool, but then wielding it and really using it to like reach out to youth. Well, something that's really exciting.
And that is a great show idea. Thank you so much. You're all doing incredible work, very inspiring. Asa Needle, Maya Salcedo, and Ryland King, three of the six winners of the Broward Youth Awards. Meet them tonight and see a video of the work that they're doing. It's very inspiring and incredible evening. Tickets are free. 7:30 ceremony, doors 5:30, Herps Theater, 401 Van Ness. You can find more information about their work and tomorrow night's event at yourcallradio.org. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rose. To see you all tomorrow night.
Thank you. And I want to spend the last minute of today's show recognizing the passing of Alan Farley. He served as a host and announcer, as many of you know, at KALW for nearly 40 years before going on medical leave in August following his diagnosis with pancreatic cancer. Alan passed away at a friend's home early Sunday morning, and we already miss him. Luckily, he was not in any pain, and he lived his life until the very end. On most mornings, I would always ask Alan, "So what did you do last night?" He was at a Giants game, the symphony, the ballet, or the theater at least 3 to 4 times a week. He really lived. A memorial is being planned, and we will let you know when the date and location is confirmed. And you can share your memories of Alan at KALW.org. We'd love to read them. Thank you. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. Where is U.S. foreign policy heading? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about the last presidential debate on foreign policy. How has it changed over the past 4 years? Join us at 10 or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. What are the most important foreign policy issues facing the U.S. today? What needs to change? And what foreign policy questions would you ask the candidates? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on, and Ellie Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.
My name's Kerry Davis.
My name's Ken Hopper.
We're ironwork is on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Mi nombre es Judith Camacho. Estamos en San Francisco.
My name is Mitchell Allen, and I'll be interviewing my mom.
Who do you want to hear from? I'm Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps. We're recording stories from the Bay Area and archiving them at the Library of Congress. Share yours at our recording booth at the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco. Call 1-800-850-4406 or visit StoryCorps.org to make a reservation.
This is KALW, San Francisco, local public radio. Stay tuned next from the BBC. It's World Have Your Say.
Hi, everyone. I'm Donna. Welcome to BBC's World's Have Your Say from Acme Industries in Chicago.
In the last couple of years, Acme Industry has essentially doubled in size, although in the last 5 or 6 months, we have seen some softening.
This is a machining factory, so we're finishing off some pretty big steel parts. They get used in mining trucks, gas drills, those kinds of things. I'm a tool group supervisor, and there are a group of us here who do all sorts of different jobs. I know that a few days ago, World Have Your Say visited a turkey farm in Ohio. Well, I guess that's a little different from our setup. But we'd also like to talk about the health of our industry and about the election. If you have any questions for us, please post them on facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay.